Someone has rightly described us human beings as the only insecure animal on the planet. It's very interesting to watch other animals, dogs, cats, elephants, rhinoceri, ostriches, and they seem to be totally at home in their environment, you know? They don't have to question what they're supposed to be about, how they're supposed to live. They certainly don't have identity crises, which is certainly a constant of our lives, it seems to me. So, if that's an absolutely fundamental, if not the fundamental urge to be secure, then we need to look at what sources of security we human beings have devised. Physical prowess, for one. But that does not endure. Intellectual acumen. That does not endure either. Those of us past 50 know as our memories begin to totter a little bit. Beauty, this too, is not long lived. So what is there, the constant, what is the constant in human experience whereby we can feel that we have secured our existence? I don't think there's much question but that it's money, wealth. Everything else can collapse, but as long as my bank account or my investments are intact, then I'm okay. Well, so what's the problem with that? We are in fact insecure. And we need to have some kind of anchorage in the world. And money is the, I think, the all-purpose device for securing that anchorage. Well, what's the problem with that? Our security, to the extent that we are touched by the life of this man Jesus, is supposed to be in our relationship with him, with the Father. And anything else is an evasion, or specious, misleading. And it creates the illusion of security. And perhaps that's the most critical problem. The security based on a lie. If there's one thing it seems to me that human beings are made for, it is for truth. You know, however much we may resist that, you know, or deny it periodically, or act against it, which we often enough do, without the truth we die as human beings. So this parable, which is pretty scary, should stand, does stand, I believe, as a kind of warning for us. And we, in the 21st century, are at a kind of disadvantage in a certain sense, in that we know more about the two-thirds of the world that are impoverished than anybody else in history has known. The most frightening statistic I know is that it would take 7 planets to sustain the style of life that we enjoy in North America. You have to have 7 planets. And I think it is true historically, I defer to Ian and the other historians among us, that never in the history of the world have so many people lived so luxuriously. And so it's this parable has even an added urgency. We are supposed to be citizens of the world, not just of North London, Ontario. And even in London, Ontario, I called the food bank during the week in preparation to talk, and their demand has risen 35% in the past 5 years. And they've said the same thing is true of the Salvation Army and the other aid agency. The jobless rate in London, Ontario is one of the highest in the country. So the poor are not some remote images flickering on a television screen. The poor are here. The poor are among us, however invisible they may be or we choose to make them. So, as always, religion, when it works, and often enough it does not work as it's supposed to, is supposed to be a means of self-confrontation. The wonderful prayer of Augustine, Lord, let me know myself, let me know you. That's what religion is supposed to bring us to. A greater understanding of ourselves, which means a greater understanding of our relationships, because we are simply the product of our relationships. So, Luke, who insists on the priority of the poor throughout his gospel, remember, Luke's gospel was written for the aristocracy, for the literate, which means the wealthy of his day. And it's Luke who insists on poverty more vigorously than anybody else in the New Testament, except Jesus. We need to sharpen our hearing, open our hearts, our eyes, our ears.